I think implicit in our two...
Start again, I was behind you.
Okay, sorry. Implicit in our two presentations are two overlapping but still significantly divergent viewpoints of how the global illicit economy works. In my view, we're dealing with, in fact, a commodity. And since it's an illicit commodity, we don't have the benefit of political economists, narrative histories to explain it to us. And so we have to do it on our own. So we begin with the fact that, according to the UN survey in 1998, that opium, as Peter said quite accurately, constitutes about 4% of global trade, which means that the global drug traffic constitutes about 4% of global trade, which is larger than textiles, automobiles, or steel. When you consider that textiles are one of three human fundamentals for survival, food, shelter, and clothing, it's extraordinary that an illicit drug has a global trade larger than textiles, which, by the way, is a highly mobile commodity, traditionally over millennia, traded long distances. So it's a fair comparison. This means we're dealing with a vast global commodity which spans continents, involves at base tens of millions of peasant producers. By the UN's estimation, 3,500,000 traffickers that then move through nodal points. Now, where do the covert agencies come in at this point? I like to think of them as, if you will, people who create a covert operation that doesn't create the global commodity and the global traffic, but can impact upon it. And what we see in Laos in the 1960s, in Afghanistan and Central America in the 1980s, is the CIA creating a kind of covert battleground where the normal instruments of the nation state and the international community are removed from the area. And suddenly you have a creation of an informal kind of free port or free zone, an enforcement-free zone, in which traffickers can actually operate with impunity. And in fact, that's all that anybody needs in order to become a very powerful criminal, an impunity from enforcement. And so the fact that, for example, the CIA got the Honduran authorities and the U.S. to back away from Allen Hyde from 1986 to 1992, at the peak of the crack cocaine epidemic in the United States, is of critical importance. So what's the significance, then, of these episodic covert wars and the periodic creation of these enforcement-free zones? I think they're twofold. First of all, I think it allows the traffic to move to a higher level, that in each case, as Peter accurately pointed out, the Golden Triangle production went from about 40 tons before World War II to actually 600 tons by 1972, 600 out of about 1,200 tons worldwide. So it's about 50 to 60% of production. Again, in Afghanistan, it takes Afghanistan from 100 tons in 1979 to 8,200 tons by 2006, 2007. So there's a massive expansion in not only the region's production, but consequently the global production and, by the way, the global networks, the cat's cradle of trafficking routes that tie peasant producers, traffickers, and consumers together on a global scale. And given the complexity of this, the vast scale of it, the huge number of people, the 3,500,000 full-time syndicate workers in the trafficking, it's beyond the capacity of any single agency, any economic regulator, if you will, to actually shape or fundamentally redirect the commodity traffic. But it can impact upon it as all economic regulation, whether by the Federal Reserve, by the European Central Bank, or by the CIA. So I like to think of the CIA as somebody who intervenes in a market, changes the character of the traffic, redirects it, creates certain zones, that takes it to new levels in scale and complexity. But I don't think that and by the way, manipulates the traffic very successfully in the service of the covert operation at the time, transforming inconsequential, minor peasant figures into powerful drug lords who can mobilize whole peoples in remote terrains and out of, you know, the vastness of arid mountains in Central Asia or scattered Hmong populations across the roof of Southeast Asia. Suddenly you've got a very powerful, coherent guerrilla force where peasant boys will fight and die for your cause, which is not their cause. And then when the operation's over, it's dissolved, but the traffic has been expanded, and it's been taken in new directions and operates in a new dimension. So it's a complex analytical puzzle that we're dealing with. I privilege the bureaucratic impact and the nature of the commodity. Peter Dale Scott privileges what we might call the entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs in vice and violence who he thinks actually shape the traffic, I think, more than I do. Okay, that's my explanation.